This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Undercurrents by Nora Roberts. Narrated for you by January Lavoie. To the Greenbrier girls, Joanne, workout companion, Kat, my sweet, sweet baby mama, Laura, the handler of everything, Mary, shopping pal, Sarah, spirit magnet. Part 1. The Cruelty of Lies. Cruelty and fear shake hands together. Honoré de Balzac. Child abuse casts a shadow the length of a lifetime. Herbert Ward. Chapter 1. From the outside, the house in Lakeview Terrace looked perfect. The dignified three stories of pale brown brick boasted wide expanses of glass to open it to the view of Reflection Lake and the Blue Ridge Mountains. Two faux turrets capped in copper added a European charm and that quiet whisper of wealth. Its lawn, a richly green skirt, sloped gently toward a trio of steps and the wide white veranda banked by azaleas that bloomed ruby red in spring. In the rear, a generous covered patio offered outdoor living space with a summer kitchen and those lovely lake views. The carefully maintained rose garden added a sweet, sophisticated scent. In season, a 42-foot sailing yacht floated serenely at the private dock. Climbing roses softened the look of the long, vertical boards of the privacy fence. The attached garage held a Mercedes SUV and sedan, two mountain bikes, ski equipment, and no clutter. Inside, the ceilings soared. Both the formal living room and the great room offered fireplaces framed in the same golden brown brick as the exterior. The decor, tasteful, though some might whisper studied, reflected the vision of the couple in charge. Quiet colors, coordinated fabrics, contemporary without edging over into stark. Dr. Graham Bigelow purchased the lot in the projected development of Lakeview Terrace when his son was 5, his daughter 3. He chose the blueprint he felt suited him and his family, made the necessary changes and additions, selected the finishes, the flooring, the tiles, the pavers, hired a decorator. His wife Eliza happily left most of the choices and decisions to her husband. His taste, in her opinion, couldn't be faulted. If and when she had an idea or suggestion, he would listen. If most often he pointed out why such an idea or suggestion wouldn't suit, he did occasionally include her input. Like Graham, Eliza wanted the newness, the status offered by the small, exclusive community on the lake in North Carolina's high country. She'd been born and raised in status, but the old sort, the sort she saw as creaky and boring. Like the house she'd grown up in across the lake. She'd been happy to sell her share of the old house to her sister and use the money to help furnish, all new, the house in Lakeview Terrace. She'd handed the cashier's check to Graham, he took care of things, without a second thought. She'd never regretted it. They'd lived there happily for nearly 9 years, raising two bright, attractive children, hosting dinner parties, cocktail parties, garden parties. Eliza's job, as wife of the chief of surgery of Mercy Hospital in nearby Asheville, was to look beautiful and stylish, to raise the children well, keep the house, entertain, and head committees. As she had a housekeeper/cook 3 times a week, a weekly groundskeeper, and a sister who was more than happy to take the children if she and Graham needed an evening out or a little getaway, she had plenty of time to focus on her looks and wardrobe. She never missed a school function, and in fact had served as PTA president for 2 years. She attended school plays, along with Graham if work didn't keep him away. She embraced fundraising, both for the school and the hospital. At every ballet recital since Britt turned 4, she'd sat front row center. She sat through most of her son Zane's baseball games as well. And if she missed some, she excused it, as anyone who'd sat through the nightmare of tedium that youth baseball provided would understand. Though she'd never admit it, Eliza favored her daughter. But Britt was such a beautiful, sweet-natured, obedient young girl. She never had to be prodded to do her homework or tidy her room, was unfailingly polite. In Zane, Eliza saw her sister, Emily. The tendency to argue or sulk, to go off on his own. Still, he kept his grades up. If the boy wanted to play baseball, he made the honor roll. Obviously, his ambition to play professionally was just a teenage fantasy. He would, of course, study medicine like his father. But for now, baseball served as the carrot, so they all avoided the stick. If Graham had to pull out that stick and punish the boy from time to time, it was for his own good. It helped build character, teach boundaries, ensure respect. As Graham liked to say, the child is the father of the man, so the child had to learn to follow the rules. 2 days before Christmas, Eliza drove the plowed streets of Lakeview toward home. She'd had a lovely holiday lunch with friends, maybe just a couple sips more champagne than she should have. She'd burned that off shopping. On Boxing Day, the family would take its annual ski trip. Or Graham and the kids would ski while she made use of the spa. Now she had a pair of gorgeous new boots to pack along with some lingerie that would warm Graham up nicely after his time on the slopes. She glanced around at the other homes, the holiday decorations. Really lovely, she thought. No tacky, inflatable Santas allowed in Lakeview Terrace, by order of the Homeowners Association. But no point being modest. Their home outshined the rest. Graham gave her carte blanche on Christmas decorating, and she used it wisely and well. The white lights would sparkle when dusk rolled in, she thought, outlining the perfect lines of the house, twining around the potted firs on the front veranda, gleaming inside the twin wreaths with their trailing red and silver ribbons on the double doors. And, of course, the living room tree, all 12 feet, white lights, silver and red star ornaments. The great room tree, the same color scheme but with angels. Of course, the mantels, the formal dining table, all tasteful and perfect. And new every year. No need to box and store when you could arrange for the rental company to come sweep it all away afterward. She'd never understood her parents' and Emily's delight in digging out ancient glass balls or tacky wooden Santas. They could have all that with their visit to the old house and Emily. Eliza would host them all for Christmas dinner, of course. Then, thank God, they'd head back to Savannah and their retirement. Emily was their favorite, she thought as she hit the remote for the garage door. No question there. It gave her a jolt to see Graham's car already in the garage, and she checked her watch. Let out a breath of relief. She wasn't late. He was home early. Delighted, especially since someone else had the carpool, she pulled in beside her husband's car, gathered her shopping bags. She went through the mudroom, hung her coat, folded her scarf, removed her boots before sliding into the black Prada flats she wore around the house. When she stepped into the kitchen, Graham, still in his suit and tie, stood at the center island. "You're home early." After setting her bags on the wet bar, she moved quickly to him, kissed him lightly. He smelled, lightly like the kiss, of Eau Sauvage, her favorite.
"Where were you?"
"Oh, I had that holiday lunch with Miranda and Jody, remember?"
She gestured vaguely toward the family calendar in the activity nook.
"We topped it off with a little shopping."
As she spoke, she walked to the refrigerator for a bottle of Perrier.
I can't believe how many people are still shopping for Christmas. Jody included, she said, adding a scoop of ice from the ice machine, pouring the sparkling water over it. Honestly, Graham, she just never seems to get organized about...
Do you think I give a damn about Jody?
His voice, calm, smooth, almost pleasant, set off alarm bells.
Of course not, my darling. I'm just babbling.
She kept the smile on her face, but her eyes turned wary.
Why don't you sit down and relax? I'll freshen your drink and we'll...
He heaved the glass, smashing the crystal at her feet. A shard dug a shallow slice across her ankle with an added sting as scotch splattered over it. The baccarat, she thought with a little frisson of heat.
Freshen that!
No longer calm and smooth, not nearly pleasant, the words slapped out at her.
I spend my day with my hands inside a human being, saving lives, and come home to an empty house?
I'm sorry, I...
Sorry?
He grabbed her arm, twisting as he slammed her back against the counter.
You're sorry you couldn't be bothered to be home? Sorry you frittered away the day and my money having lunch, shopping, gossiping with those idiot bitches while I spent 6 hours in the OR?
Her breath began to hitch, her heart to pound.
I didn't know you'd be home early. If you'd called me, I would have come straight home.
Now I have to report to you?
She barely heard the rest of the words that hammered at her. Ungrateful, respect, duty. But she knew that look, that avenging angel look. The dark blonde hair, perfectly groomed, the smooth, handsome face suffused with angry color. The rage in those bright blue eyes, so cold, so cold. The frisson of heat became electric snaps.
It was on the calendar, her voice rose in pitch. I told you only this morning.
Do you think I have time to check your ridiculous calendar? You will be home when I walk in the door. Do you understand me?
He slammed her against the counter again, shooting a jolt of pain up her spine.
I'm responsible for everything you have. This home, the clothes on your back, the food you eat. I pay for someone to cook, to clean, so you can be available to me when I say. So you damn well will be home when I walk in the door. You'll damn well spread your legs when I want to fuck you.
To prove it, he rammed his erection against her. She slapped him. Even knowing what was coming, maybe because of what was coming, she slapped him. And that rage went from cold to hot. His lips peeled back. He plowed his fist into her midsection. He never hit her in the face. At 14, Zane Bigelow's heart and soul centered on baseball. He liked girls. He liked looking at naked girls once his pal Micah showed him how to bypass the parental controls on his computer. But baseball still ranked number one. Numero uno. Tall for his age, gangly with it, he longed to get through school, be discovered by a scout for the Baltimore Orioles. He'd settle for any American League team, but that was his number one pick. Totally numero uno. He'd play shortstop. The amazing Cal Ripken would have retired by then. Besides, Iron Man Ripken was back at third. This comprised Zane's ambitions. And actually seeing a naked girl in the, you know, flesh. Nobody in the world could have been happier than Zane Bigelow as Mrs. Carter, Micah's mom, drove the carpool gang home in her Lexus SUV. Even if she had Cher singing about life after love playing. He didn't have a passion for cars, yet, just a young male's innate knowledge. And he preferred rap, not that he could play it in the house. But even with Cher singing, his sister and the other two girls squealing about Christmas, Micah deep into Donkey Kong on his Game Boy, Micah's desperate Christmas wish was the new Game Boy Color, Zane hit the highest note on the happy scale.
No school for 10 whole days. Even the prospect of being pushed into skiing, not his favorite sport, especially when his father kept pointing out his little sister skied rings around him, couldn't dampen his mood. No math. 10 days. He hated math like he hated spinach salad, which was a lot. Mrs. Carter pulled over to let Cecile Marlborough out. There was the usual shuffling, hauling of backpacks, the high-pitched squeal of girls. They all had to hug because Christmas vacation. Sometimes they had to hug because it was like Tuesday or whatever. He'd never get it. Everybody called out Merry Christmas. They'd called out Happy Holidays when dropping Pete Green off because he was Jewish. Almost home, Zane thought, watching the houses go by. He figured to fix himself a snack, then no homework, no freaking math, close up in his room and settle in with an hour on triple play on his PlayStation. He knew Lois, off till like après ski, planned to make lasagna before she left for her own family holiday stuff. And Lois's lasagna was awesome. Mom would actually have to turn on the oven to heat it up, but she could handle that much. Better yet, Grams and Pop got in from Savannah tomorrow. He wished they could stay at his house instead of with his Aunt Emily, but he planned to ride his bike over to the old lake house the next afternoon and hang a while. He could talk Emily into baking cookies, wouldn't even have to talk hard for that. And they were coming for Christmas dinner. Mom wouldn't even have to turn on the oven for that one. Catered. After dinner, Britt would play piano. He sucked at piano, which equaled another regular dig from his dad. And they'd do a sing-along. Corny. Totally corny, but he sort of liked it. Plus, he sang pretty good, so he didn't get ragged on. As the car pulled over at his house, Zane exchanged fist bumps with Micah.
Dude, Mary.
Dude,
Micah said. Back at ya.
While Britt and Chloe hugged as if they wouldn't see each other for a year, Zane slid out.
Merry Christmas, Chloe. Merry Christmas, Mrs. Carter, and thanks for the ride.
Merry Christmas, Zane, and you're always welcome.
She shot him a smile, made eye contact. She was really pretty for a mom.
Thank you, Mrs. Carter, and Merry Christmas.
Britt practically sang it.
I'll call you, Chloe.
Zane slung his backpack over one shoulder as Britt climbed out.
What are you calling her for? What could you have left to talk about? Y'all never shut up all the way home.
We have plenty to talk about.
Britt, more than a full head shorter, shared his coloring. The dark hair, Britt's nearly to her waist and pinned back with reindeer barrettes, the same sharp green eyes. Her face was still sort of round and babyish while his had gone angular. Because, Em said, he was growing up. Not that he was ready to shave or anything, though he did check carefully every day. Because she was his sister, he felt honor-bound to give her grief.
But y'all don't actually say anything. It's like, ooh, Justin Timberlake.
He followed up with loud kissy noises, making her blush. He knew Timberlake was her not-so-secret crush.
Just shut up.
You shut up.
You shut up.
They back and forthed that until they reached the veranda. Switched to snarling looks, as both knew if they went inside arguing and their mother heard, an endless lecture would follow. Zane dug out his key as his father decreed the house stayed locked whether or not anyone was home. The second the door cracked open, he heard it. The snarl dropped from Britt's face. Her eyes went huge, filled with fear and tears. She slapped her hands over her ears.
Go upstairs, Zane told her. Go straight up to your room. Stay there.
He's hurting her again. He's hurting her.
Instead of running to her room, Britt ran inside, ran back toward the great room, stood, hands still over her ears.
Stop!
She screamed it.
Stop! 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 Stop!
Zane saw blood smeared on the floor where his mother tried to crawl away. Her sweater was torn, one of her shoes missing.
Go to your rooms,
Graham shouted it as he hauled Eliza up by her hair.
This is none of your business.
Britt just kept screaming even when Zane tried to pull her back. He saw his father's hate-filled eyes track over, latch onto his sister, and a new fear flashed hot inside him, burned something away. He didn't think, didn't know what he intended to do. He shoved his sister back, stood between her and his father, a skinny kid who'd yet to grow into his feet. And with that flash of heat, he charged.
Get away from her, you son of a bitch!
He rammed straight into Graham. Surprise, more than the power of the hit, knocked Graham back a step.
Get the hell away!
Zane never saw it coming. He was 14, and the only fights he'd ever participated in consisted of a little pushy-shovey and insults. He'd felt his father's fist, a blow to the gut, sometimes the kidneys, where it didn't show. This time the fists struck his face, and something behind his eyes exploded, blurred his vision. He felt two more before he dropped, the wild pain of them rising over the fear, the anger. His world went gray, and through the gray, lights sizzled and flashed. With the taste of blood in his mouth, his sister's screams banging in his head, he passed out. The next he knew, he realized his father had slung him over his shoulder, carrying him up the stairs. His ears rang, but he could hear Britt crying, hear his mother telling her to stop. His father didn't lay him down on the bed, but shrugged him off his shoulder so Zane bounced on the mattress. Every inch of his body cried out in fresh pain.
Disrespect me again. I'll do more than break your nose, blacken your eye. You're nothing. Do you understand me? You're nothing until I say you are. Everything you have, including the breath in your body, is because of me.
He leaned close as he spoke in that smooth, calm tone. Zane saw two of him, couldn't even manage to nod. The shaking started, the teeth chattering cold of shock.
You will not leave this room until I permit it. You will speak to no one. You will tell no one the private business of this family, or the punishment you forced me to levy today will seem like a picnic. No one would believe you. You're nothing. I'm everything. I could kill you in your sleep and no one would notice. Remember that the next time you think about trying to be a big man.
He went out, closed the door. Zane drifted again. It was easier to drift than to deal with the pain, to deal with the words his father had spoken that had fallen like more fists. When he surfaced again, the light had changed. Not dark, but getting there. He couldn't breathe through his nose. It felt clogged, like he had a terrible cold. The sort of cold that made his head hammer with pain, had his eyes throbbing. His gut hurt something terrible. When he tried to sit up, the room spun, and he feared throwing up. When he heard the lock click, he started to shake again. He prepared to beg, plead, grovel, anything that kept those fists from pounding on him again. His mother came in, flipping the light as she did. The light exploded more pain, so he shut his eyes.
Your father says you're to clean yourself up, then use this ice bag on your face.
Her voice, cool, matter-of-fact, hurt almost as much as his father's.
Mom, your father says to keep your head elevated. You may leave your bed, only to use your bathroom. As you see, your father has removed your computer, your PlayStation, your television, items he's generously given you. You will see and speak to no one except your father or me. You will not participate in Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
But
you have the flu.
He searched her face for some sign of pity, gratitude, feeling.
I was trying to stop him from hurting you. I thought he might hurt Britt.
I didn't ask for or need your help.
Her voice, clipped, cold, made his chest ache.
What's between me and your father is between me and your father.
You have the next 2 days to consider your place in this family and to earn back any privileges.
She turned toward the door.
Do as you're told.
When she went out, left him alone, he made himself sit up, had to close his eyes against the spinning and just breathe. On shaky legs, he stood, stumbled into the bathroom, vomited, nearly passed out again. When he managed to gain his feet, he stared at his face in the mirror over the sink. It didn't look like his face, he thought, oddly detached. The mouth swollen, bottom lip split. God, the nose like a red balloon. Both eyes black, one swollen half shut. Dried blood everywhere. He lifted a hand, touched his fingers to his nose, had pain blasting. Because he was afraid to take a shower, still dizzy, he used a washcloth to try to clean off some of the blood. He had to grit his teeth, had to hang on to the sink with one hand to stay upright, but he feared not doing what he'd been told more than the pain. He cried and wasn't ashamed. Nobody could see anyway. Nobody would care. He inched his way back to bed. Breathed out when he eased down to take off his shoes, his jeans. Every minute or two, he had to stop, catch his breath again, wait for the dizziness to pass. In his boxers and sweatshirt, he crawled into bed, took the ice bag his mother had left, and laid it as lightly as he could on his nose. It hurt too much, just too much, so he switched to his eye, and that brought a little relief. He lay there, full dark now, planning. He'd run away. As soon as he could, he'd stuff his backpack with some clothes. He didn't have much money because his father banked all of it, but he had a little he'd hidden in a pair of socks, his saving for video games money. He could hitchhike, and that thought brought a thrill. Maybe to New York. He'd get away from this house where everything looked so clean, where ugly, ugly secrets hid like his video game money. He'd get a job. He could get a job. No more school, he thought as he drifted again. That was something. He woke again, heard the lock again, and pretended to sleep. But it wasn't his father's steps or his mother's. He opened his eyes as Britt shined a little pink flashlight in his face. Don't. Shh, she warned him.
I can't turn the light on in case they wake up and see.
She sat on the side of the bed, stroked a hand over his arm.
I brought you a PB&J. I couldn't get lasagna because they'd know if any was missing from the dish. You need to eat.
Stomach's not so good, Britt.
Just a little. Try a little.
You need to go. If they catch you in here.
They're asleep. I made sure. I'm staying with you. I'm going to stay with you until you can eat something. I'm so sorry, Zane.
Don't cry.
You're crying.
He let the tears roll. He just didn't have the strength to stop them. Sniffling at her own tears, swiping at them, Britt reached down to stroke his arm.
I brought milk, too. They won't notice if a glass of milk is gone. I cleaned everything up, and when you're done, I'll wash the glass.
They spoke in whispers. They were used to it, but now her voice hitched.
He hit you so hard, Zane. He hit you and hit you, and when you were on the ground, he kicked you in the stomach. I thought you were dead.
She laid her head on his chest, shoulders shaking. He stroked her hair.
Did he hurt you?
No. He sort of squeezed my arms and shook me, yelled at me to shut up, so I did. I was afraid not to.
That's good. You did the right thing.
You did.
Her whisper thickened with tears.
You tried to do the right thing. She didn't try to stop him from hurting you. She didn't say anything. And when he stopped, he told her to clean up the blood on the floor. There was glass broken in the kitchen. To clean it up,
to clean herself up and have dinner on the table by 6.
She sat up, held out half the sandwich she'd neatly cut in two. In that moment, he loved her so much it hurt his heart. He took it, tried a bite, and found it didn't threaten to come up again.
We have to tell Emily and Grams and Pop you're sick. You got the flu and you're contagious. You have to rest and Dad's taking care of you. He won't let them come up to see you. Then we have to tell people at the resort you fell off your bike. He said all this at dinner. I had to eat or he'd get mad again. Then I threw up when I went upstairs.
He took another bite, reached for her hand in the dark.
I know how that feels.
When we get back, we have to say you had a skiing accident. Fell. Dad took care of you.
Yeah.
The single word rang bitter.
Bitter. He took care of me.
He'll hurt you again if we don't. Maybe worse. I don't want him to hurt you again, Zane. You were trying to stop him from hitting Mom. You were protecting me, too. You thought he was going to hit me. So did I.
He felt her shift, saw in the faint light of the flashlight she'd set on the bed that she'd turned to stare toward the window.
One day I guess he will.
No. No, he won't.
Inside the pain, fury rose.
You won't give him any reason to. And I won't let him.
He doesn't need a reason. You don't have to be a grown-up to understand that.
Though her tone sounded adult, fresh tears leaked.
I think they don't love us. He couldn't love us and hurt us, make us lie. And she couldn't love us and let it keep happening. I think they don't love us.
He knew they didn't. Had known for sure when his mother had come in, looked at him with nothing in her eyes.
We've got each other.
While she sat with him, making sure he ate, he understood he couldn't run away. Couldn't run and leave Britt. He had to stay. He had to get stronger. He had to get strong enough to fight back. Not to protect his mother, but his sister. Chapter 2. On Christmas Eve, Emily Walker still had half a dozen items left on her to-do list. She always made lists, always worked up a schedule. And invariably, every item on every list in her history of lists took longer than she thought it would. Every freaking time. The other thing about lists? Other items tended to pop up onto it, adding yet more time she hadn't anticipated. Such as today. In addition to giving the house one last going over, making her daddy's favorite stuffed pork chops and scalloped potatoes for Christmas Eve dinner, giving herself a much-needed home facial, driving out to Asheville to pick her parents up from the airport, she'd added in a quick trip to the market to pick up a stewing chicken. Poor Zane had the flu, so she'd also added making that stewing chicken in a nice batch of chicken soup, and that added on delivering the soup to her sister's house across the lake. Which added on the chore of being sweet and nice to Eliza. To make it worse, she had to be sweet and nice to Eliza after Eliza decreed that Christmas dinner had to be at the old house. Oh, not to worry, said Eliza, Emily thought while she threw on fresh clothes. She had to skip the facial, needed or not. No, not to worry, because Eliza had already contacted the caterer and switched the venue. Venue, for God's sake. And who in holy hell hired on a caterer for a family holiday dinner? Eliza Snootface Walker Bigelow, that's who. But she'd be sweet. She'd be nice. She damn well wouldn't start something up with Eliza during their parents' visit. She'd take over the soup, still simmering on the stove, have a little visit with her sick nephew. And she'd sneak him the latest Dark Tower novel, since King, along with a good dozen others, didn't make Eliza and Graham's approved authors list. What they didn't know wouldn't come back and bite her in the ass. Zane was good at keeping secrets. Maybe too good, Emily thought as she slapped some makeup on her face. Maybe she didn't spend as much time with the kids as she should, but sometimes when she did, she got the sense of something. Something just not altogether right. Probably her imagination, she admitted, pulling on her boots. Or just looking for something to whack her older sister with. They hadn't been close as kids. Opposites didn't always attract, and the 9-year gap between them might have added to it. They'd grown no closer as adults. In fact, while usually polite, usually, on the surface, there were those undercurrents again. An active, mutual dislike. In fact, if it hadn't been for her parents and her niece and nephew, Emily could have gone the rest of her life never seeing or speaking to Eliza again. A terrible thing, she murmured as she hurried downstairs. An awful thing to think, to feel. Worse, she feared some of that thinking, that feeling, was straight-out resentment on her part, which added shameful. Eliza was prettier and always had been. Not that Emily wasn't cute enough herself, even without the home facial. But Eliza could claim double scoops of good looks and bigger boobs, too. And, of course, given that 9-year head start, had done everything first. She'd starred in school plays, made head cheerleader, wore the crown as homecoming queen, as prom queen. And when she'd graduated, hadn't their grandparents given her a slick silver BMW convertible? Then she'd gone and bagged herself a doctor, a surgeon, and one handsome as a movie star. Had her fancy-dancy country club engagement party, her snooty-assed bridal shower, her extravagant and splashy white wedding. And she'd looked just magnificent, Emily remembered, as she turned off the heat under the soup, like a queen in her big, beautiful white dress. She hadn't resented Eliza that day. She'd been happy for her, even when forced to wear the blush pink attendance gown with its poofy shoulders. But after that, resentment had built right back up again. Don't think about it now, she ordered herself. Put on her coat, her hat, her gloves. It's Christmas, and poor Zane's sick. She got her purse, with the Dark Tower novel already stuffed inside, got hot pads to cart the soup out to her truck, and to transfer the soup to Eliza's. She'd had the truck washed, waxed, and detailed, something crossed off yesterday's list, so sticky notes didn't decorate the dash. And she'd completed a personal check on all the rental bungalows, so when her parents asked, and they would, she could tell them Walker Lakeside Bungalows, the family enterprise, was safe and secure. She liked being in charge of it now that her parents had retired. Maybe she resented, that word again, cutting the check to Eliza for her share of the profits every quarter. Eliza didn't do a damn thing, but blood was blood, family was family, so she got a share of what her parents had built, and she maintained. At least the house was hers, just hers now, she thought, looking back on it after she settled the soup pot on the floor of the passenger's seat. She loved the house, the wood and stone ramble of it, the wraparound porch, the views of the lake and mountains. It had been home all of her life, and she intended for it to be home until she died. Since she didn't have kids, and the likelihood of making any looked dim at best, she planned to leave it to Zane and Britt when the time came. Maybe one of them would live there. Maybe they'd rent it out or sell it off. She'd be dead, so she wouldn't know the difference. A cheerful Christmas thought. Laughing at herself, she climbed in the truck, thinking how pretty the house would look come dusk when all the colorful lights came on, the trees sparkling in the window. Just the way it had every Christmas in her memory. The house smelling of pine and cranberry, of cookies warm from the oven. As she pulled out to take the lake road, she blew her bangs out of her eyes. A trim hadn't made it on her pre-Christmas list and had to wait. As she drove around Reflection Lake, she turned the radio on, the volume up, and sang along with Springsteen as she passed the rental bungalows, the docks, the other lake houses, and curved around toward town with the snow-topped mountains rising up into the pale blue of winter sky. The road rose and fell, twisted and turned,
She knew every inch. She cut through Main Street just to see the shops all done up for Christmas and the star rising high above the Lakeview Hotel. She spotted Cyrus Puffer carting a bag, heading toward his parked truck. She'd been married to Cyrus for almost 6 months. God, nearly 10 years ago, she thought. They'd decided pretty quick they made better friends with benefits than husband and wife, and so had had, in her opinion, one of the only truly amicable divorces in the wide world of divorces. She pulled over to say hey.
Last minute shopping?
No. Yeah. Sort of.
He grinned at her, a good-looking guy with bright red hair and a happy disposition.
Marlene wanted ice cream. Nothing but mint chocolate chip would do.
Well, aren't you the good husband?
He'd found the right woman the second time around. Emily had introduced them herself and ended up being best man at the wedding.
Doing my best.
That grin just wouldn't quit.
I guess I'm lucky she didn't want pickles to go with it.
Oh my God.
She gripped his face with both hands.
Oh my God, Si, you're going to be a daddy.
We just found out yesterday for certain. She doesn't want to tell anybody yet, except her folks and mine, but she won't mind me telling you.
It's in the vault, but oh my God, I'm dancing for you.
She yanked him farther through the window to give him a hard, loud kiss.
Best Christmas present ever. Oh, Si, you tell her merry, merrier, merriest from me. And when she wants to talk about it, just give me a call.
I will. I'm so happy I could split in two. I gotta get the ice cream home to Mama.
You tell her I want to give the baby shower.
Really?
You bet I do. Merry Christmas, Si. Oh, my God.
She grinned all the way through town, back to the lake, and into Lakeview Terrace. As she did every time she turned in, she thought, I'd kill myself if I had to live here. No question the houses were big and mostly beautiful, and not exactly all the same, as there had been several styles and plans to choose from, as she recalled, and many add-on options. But there was, to her eye, an edging toward creepy Stepford air in the development. Perfect perfection down to the tidy sidewalks, the paved or pavered driveways, the small park, residents and their guests only, with its carefully planted trees, carefully placed benches and walkways. But her sister loved it, and in truth, the perfect rows of McMansions with their manicured lawns suited Eliza very well. Reminding herself to be sweet, Emily pulled into the driveway. She carried the soup to the door, rang the bell. Like a stranger, she thought, not like family. But they kept their personal palace locked tight. Sweet, she thought again, and put a smile on her face. She kept it in place when Eliza opened the door, looking just damn beautiful in winter white pants, red cashmere sweater, her hair in soft, dark waves to her shoulders. And her eyes, the same sharp Walker green as Emily's, showed only mild annoyance.
Emily, we weren't expecting you.
Not Emily, Merry Christmas, come in. But Emily kept smiling.
I got your message about Zane and dinner tomorrow. I tried to call you back, but
we've been busy.
Yeah, me too. But I felt so bad for Zane, so I made Mama's famous cure. Chicken noodle soup. How's he doing?
He's sleeping.
Eliza, it's cold. Aren't you going to let me in?
Who is it, sweetheart?
Graham, gilded, handsome, in cashmere, of course, his sweater a silvery gray, stepped up behind Eliza. He smiled, but as Emily noted often, it didn't really reach his eyes.
Emily, Merry Christmas. This is a surprise.
I made soup for Zane. I wanted to bring it by, see him before I pick up Mama and Daddy from the airport.
Come in, come in. Let me take that.
It's hot. I'll just take it back to the kitchen if that's okay.
Of course. That's very sweet of you, the soup. I'm sure Zane will appreciate it.
She carried it back with Graham beside her, past the magazine perfection of holiday decor.
The house looks amazing.
She set the pot on the stovetop.
Why don't I take Zane up a bowl, sit with him a few minutes? Bet he could use a little company.
I told you, he's sleeping.
She glanced at her sister.
Well, maybe he's... And contagious,
Graham added, slipping an arm around Eliza's waist.
I couldn't let you expose yourself, especially when you're going to be in close contact with seniors.
She didn't think of her parents as seniors, and the word just pissed her off.
We're all healthy as horses, and he's going to come to dinner tomorrow anyway, so...
No, he won't be well enough for that. He needs rest,
Graham said, serious doctor voice.
But if you wanted to move dinner to my place...
Better for everyone,
Graham said cheerfully.
We'll stop by, have dinner so your parents can see Eliza and Britt, but we won't stay long.
She actually felt her jaw drop.
You're going to leave Zane alone? On Christmas?
He understands, and for today and most of tomorrow, he'll sleep in any case. But we'll be sure to add your chicken soup to his medication and my care. I know what's best,
Graham continued before she could object again.
I'm not only his father, I'm a doctor.
The thought, even the thought of Zane spending Christmas alone, sick, in bed, made her ache inside.
It's not right. Couldn't we, I don't know, wear masks? He's just a kid.
It's Christmas.
We're his parents.
Eliza's tone took on an edge.
We decide. When and if you have children, you'll decide what's best for them.
Where's Britt? At least
in her room. A Christmas project.
Graham tapped his fingers to his lips.
Top secret, apparently. You'll see her tomorrow. Again, thank you so much for thinking of Zane. Going to the trouble to make him soup.
He stepped away from Eliza, put a firm arm around Emily, and turned her around, walked her back to the door in what felt like a damn frog march.
Tell Quentin and Ellen we're looking forward to seeing them tomorrow.
I can bring his gifts over tonight so he'll have them in the morning.
No need. He's 14, Emily, not 4. Drive safely now.
He didn't physically shove her out of the house, but it amounted to the same. Tears of anger and frustration stung her eyes as she walked back to her truck.
It's not right. It's not right. It's not right.
She said it over and over as she got behind the wheel, drove out of the development. But she was only the aunt. She could do nothing. Zane's alarm clock read 6:45. At night, he knew that much. He'd spent more than 24 hours locked in his room, and his face and belly hurt so bad he'd only managed some patchy sleep. The pain wouldn't stop, and raw hunger added to it. He'd eaten the other half of Britt's PB&J in the early hours of the morning. Just after 8, his mother brought in dry toast and a small pitcher of water. Another ice bag. Bread and water, he thought. Prisoner food. Because that's just what he was. She hadn't said a word to him, nor had he said a word to her. Now it was nearly 7 at night, and no one had come. He worried about Britt. Was she locked in her room, too? Sometimes he, Zane wouldn't think of the man as dad anymore, locked them in. But only for a few hours, and they had TV or games or something to do. He'd tried to read. They hadn't taken his books. But it hurt too much. Gave him a terrible headache. He'd dragged himself into the shower because the hurt made him sweat, and he couldn't stand his own stink. With the water running, his face throbbing, he'd cried like a baby. His face looked like Rocky's after a few rounds with Apollo Creed. He had to get stronger. Micah's dad lifted weights. He had a whole room in their house for them. He could ask Mr. Carter to show him how to lift. He'd say how he wanted to build himself up some before baseball season. And in 3.5 years, he could go away to college. But how could he go away to college and leave Britt? Maybe he should go to the police, tell them everything. But the chief of police played golf with his father.
Everybody in Lakeview respected Dr. Graham Bigelow. It hurt to think about, so he thought about baseball. He held a baseball under the covers, stroking it, feeling the stitching, like a kid cuddled a teddy bear for comfort. He heard the lock click, and with hunger gnawing like a rat at his belly, felt relief. Until he saw his father. He saw him in the backwash of the hall light, tall, well-muscled, carrying a tray and his doctor's bag. Graham walked in, set the tray on the bench at the foot of the bed. He walked back to the door, flipped on the lights. God, they hurt his eyes. Shut the door behind him.
Sit up,
Graham said briskly. Trembling again, Zane pushed himself to sitting.
Any dizziness?
Be careful, Zane thought. Be respectful.
A little, yes, sir.
Nausea?
A little. Not as much as last night.
Have you vomited?
Graham asked as he opened his medical bag.
Not since last night.
Graham took out a penlight, shined it in Zane's eyes.
Follow my finger. Eyes only.
It hurt. Even that hurt. But Zane did what he was told.
Headache?
Yes, sir.
Double vision?
Not anymore, no, sir.
Graham checked his ears, his teeth.
Any blood in your urine?
No, no, sir.
You have a mild concussion. You're lucky, considering your behavior, it isn't worse. Put your head back.
When he did, Graham pressed his fingers to either side of Zane's nose. Pain exploded, a nova burst. Crying out, Zane tried to push the hands away. Graham reached in his bag for tools, and fear sweat coated every inch of Zane's skin.
Please, please don't. It hurts. Dad, please.
Put your head back.
Graham closed a hand around Zane's throat, squeezed lightly.
Be a man, for God's sake.
He screamed. He couldn't help it. He didn't see what his father did. Even if he'd opened his eyes, he wouldn't have been able to see through the red mist of pain. Tears ran. He couldn't help them either. When it was over, he simply curled into a shivering ball.
You can thank me you won't have a deviated septum. You can thank me,
Graham repeated. Zane swallowed the bile that rose in his throat.
Thank you.
Use the ice. You'll remain in your room until we leave for the resort on Boxing Day. You had an accident on your bike. You were careless. At the resort, you'll remain in your room in the suite. When we return home, you'll have had an accident while skiing. You were careless, not quite recovered from the flu, but stubborn. If you deviate from this in any way, it will go very badly for you. I will go to court and have you locked away with all the other misfits. Do you understand?
Yes.
Though Zane kept his eyes closed, he knew Graham loomed over the bed, tall, golden, smirking.
Next week, you'll write to your grandparents thanking them for whatever gifts they had the poor judgment to buy you. Those gifts will be donated to charity. The gifts your mother and I selected for you will be returned. You deserve nothing, so nothing is what you'll receive. Do you understand?
Yes.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Please go away.
Your computer will be returned for schoolwork only. I will check it nightly. If in a month's time you've shown proper remorse, if your grades don't suffer, if, in my judgment, you've learned a valuable lesson, the rest of your things will be returned. If not, they too will be donated to someone more worthy. If not, I'll rescind my permission for you to play baseball, not only this coming season, but ever again. Do you understand?
Hate. Zane hadn't known he could feel so much hate.
Yes, sir.
I'll be looking into military academies as an alternative for your education if you don't straighten up. Your aunt sent the soup. Be sure to thank her for it when and if you see her again.
At last,
At last he left, locking the door behind him. Zane stayed as he was until he thought he could ride over the waves of pain. He'd known his father could be mean, could be violent, that he could slide on the mask of the perfect husband, father, neighbor, over what was under it all. But he hadn't known or hadn't accepted until that moment his father was a monster.
"I'll never call him Dad again," Zane vowed. "Not ever."
He made himself get up, sit on the bench at the foot of the bed. He picked up the bowl of soup. "Cold," he noted. "Just one more piece of mean." "But you lose, you fucking bastard," he thought as he ate. "I've never tasted anything better in my whole life." When he felt steadier, he took another shower since he'd sweated through his t-shirt. He made himself walk around the room, walk and walk. Getting stronger had to start sometime. He wished he had another bowl of soup, but settled for icing his face. He heard Christmas music drifting up from downstairs, walked to the window. He looked out over the lake, saw the lights glimmering on the other side. He could pick out his aunt's house, thought of her and his grandparents celebrating Christmas Eve. Did they think about him? He hoped they did. Sick with the flu, and isn't that a shame? But they didn't know. Didn't know. Didn't know. And what would they, could they do if they did? Nothing against a man like his father. If Dr. Graham Bigelow said his son fell off his bike or hurt himself skiing, everyone would believe it. No one would believe a man like that would beat on his own son. And if he tried to make them, what would they do anyway? He couldn't go to military school. He couldn't stand it. He couldn't leave Brit. So he needed to pretend, just like his parents pretended. He'd pretend he'd learned a valuable lesson. He'd say, "Yes, sir." He'd keep his grades up. He'd do everything he had to do. One day he'd be strong enough or old enough or brave enough to stop pretending. Still, who'd believe him? Maybe his aunt would. Maybe. He didn't think she liked his father very much, or his mother either. He knew they didn't like her because they said stuff about her all the time. How she'd never amounted to much, how she couldn't even keep a husband, and lots of stuff. He heard the piano, felt some relief. Brit was okay if she could play the piano. Maybe he could get proof. He could get Micah to show him how to set up like a hidden camera or something. No, he couldn't pull Micah into it. If Micah told his parents, they might say something to his parents. No baseball ever? Military school? Another beating? Not brave enough. But he could write it all down. Inspired, he went to his desk, found a notebook, pens, pencils. Not yet, he decided. One of them might come in again before they went to bed. If they caught him, jig up. So he waited. Lay in the dark with his baseball for comfort and company. He heard his father call out,
"Sweet Christmas dreams, Brit."
And she called back,
"Good night."
Moments later, he heard her whisper at his door.
"I couldn't sneak in. I'm sorry. I heard you yelling, but..."
"It's okay. I'm okay. Go to bed before they catch you."
"I'm sorry,"
she repeated. He heard her door close. He slipped into sleep for a while. His mother's laughter woke him. Coming upstairs, muffled words as they moved past his door, staying where he was, eyes closed, breathing even, because he couldn't trust them. And he was proved right when a few minutes later the lock clicked. The light from the hall reddened the back of his eyes. He kept them closed, but not tight. That's how they knew you faked it. Even after the door shut again, The lock clicked again. He waited. 1 minute, 2, 5. He counted it off. When he felt safe, he crept over to his desk, got the notebook, a couple of pens. Just in case, he took them and the little flashlight Britt had left him back to his bed. If he heard the lock click, he'd have enough time to shove everything under the blanket, lie down again. In the little beam of light, he began to write. Maybe nobody will believe me. He says they won't. He's too important, too smart, so they won't believe me. But my English teacher says that writing things down can help you think and to remember stuff. I need to remember. On December 23rd, 1998, when my sister Britt and me, and I, he corrected, came home from school, my mother was on the floor. My father was hitting her again, and when I tried to stop him, he hurt me really bad. He wrote for more than an hour. When he grew too tired to write more, he got a coin from his bank, used it to unscrew the air vent. He hid the notebook inside, put the pens away, even though he'd run one out of ink. Then he crawled back into bed and slept. Chapter 3. Zane followed orders. The pain eased. The bruises faded. No one at the resort questioned Dr. Bigelow's bike accident explanation or his orders for Zane to remain undisturbed in his room during their stay. No one in Lakeview questioned Dr. Bigelow's skiing mishap explanation. Well, Emily sort of did, wondering why Zane had been allowed to ski when he'd been recovering from the flu. But it didn't change anything. Life went on. If he'd learned a valuable lesson, it was to be careful. He kept his room clean and tidy without prodding, did his chores without a murmur of protest. He studied, more out of fear than interest. If his grades dropped, he'd face punishment. If his grades dropped, he'd lose baseball. Baseball became not only his passion, his life's dream, but his future escape. When he signed with the majors, he'd leave Lakeview and never look back. Everyone acted as if December 23rd never happened. Everyone inside the house in Lakeview Terrace lived the lie. He passed his father's tests. He was smart enough to know they were tests. The quick shoves or sharp slaps for no reason, and the satisfied look on his father's face when Zane kept his eyes on the ground and said nothing. At night, inside the quiet of his room, he wrote the truth.